Blog Talk Radio.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, and the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease. The doctors of the future are here." Welcome to Blue Zone Wellness with your host, Keith Henry, ND, one of the doctors of the future.
Hi, and welcome to Blue Zone Wellness. I hope you're doing good on this beautiful Sunday afternoon. I'm broadcasting from Orlando, Florida. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry, and I'd just like to go ahead and remind you, as I do every week if you're listening, that you can follow me on Facebook. You can look me up at facebook.com/naturedoc, or you can follow me at Twitter, at Blue Zone Wellness. You can visit bluezonewellness.org. You can also visit phasethroughministries.com/WordPress. That's PHASE, the number 3, ministries/WordPress. Now, again, thank you for visiting with me this evening or this afternoon and listening in. Again, I'm broadcasting from right outside of Orlando, Florida. And welcome to all of my good friends here in the U.S. and around the world, especially over in Costa Rica. To remind you to visit me every week right here on Blue Zone Wellness from 4 to 5 p.m. as we discuss natural health and natural remedies. We have a very interesting show for you today. Our main topic is how to eliminate infections without antibiotics. But we have some more articles in this first week in Natural News Review section. If you haven't listened before, this is the section where we look at articles that came out during the week, and we discuss and analyze those articles. Then we move on to the healing food section, where we talk about some of the healing foods, some of them be fruits or vegetables, and we talk about some of the benefits, the nutritional benefits of foods, which ones you eat that may be considerably high in particular vitamins or minerals or nutrients that are good for the body. Then we go over to the healing herb, healing supplement, which is the final segment. We typically talk about a healing herb or a healing supplement. And what we've been doing in the past few weeks, though, in this segment, we've been talking about specific vitamins and minerals, how to recognize deficiency, the symptoms of deficiency, rather, and the therapeutic daily amounts, the recommended daily allowance, etc. We've been going through those because essentially what you're getting from foods are nutrients. At least that's what you want to get from foods or nutrients. Again, we have a very interesting show for you today. We're going to start off by talking about an article that we didn't get to last week. And in this article, we're talking about the article from Mercola.com, where it talks about, Dr. Mercola is talking about in hospitals, how there are probably hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars spent on unnecessary procedures. And many of these procedures are oftentimes not helpful at all. And this is one of the things that drives up the healthcare costs, and not only healthcare costs overall, but individual healthcare costs. And you may be surprised at some of the procedures that are being used. Not only are they, some of them are not helpful, but some of them are even downright dangerous. And because some people want to make money, it's a very interesting article. We're going to talk about that. Then we're going to talk about how we can deal with antibiotics, or heal infections rather, without the use of antibiotics. And I think you'll find this article very interesting as well. Then we're going to pivot over and we're going to look at a particular type of seaweed that's shown to be, in studies, to be more efficacious for shrinking breast cancer tumors, than even some forms of chemo. Then we're going to pivot over into our healing food section, where in that section we're going to be talking about how a vegetarian diet actually can lower your blood pressure and improve your blood lipid biomarkers and to help reduce heart disease. We're going to also in that segment talk a little bit about the benefits of eating mango. Again, that's our healing foods section. And then finally, we'll go over and continue our series on talking about the benefits and the amounts and dosages of different minerals and vitamins that we've been going through. And I think we stopped before on vitamin E, if I'm not mistaken. If we didn't, we'll pick up, continue with vitamin E. Now, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief message. And when we come back, we are going to jump right into our program. Again, we have a very interesting and fascinating program today. Thanks for listening.
How do you feel? No, really. How do you feel? Do you feel lively? Are you bursting with energy? Or do you feel run down and suffer from a lack of energy most of the time? Have frequent colds, aches and pains of one sort or another? The fact of the matter is that most people in America are not well. But you can begin to change all of that today by simply visiting the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog of Keith Henry, ND, at www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Go there now and explore the wealth of amazing wellness information. That's www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress, the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog.
You are listening to Blue Zone Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry on BlueZoneWellness.org. Be sure to join us here every week at the same time. You can also listen at blogtalkradio.com/BlueZoneWellness. There you can also download the app and listen to the archived versions on your smartphone. So from Blue Zone Wellness, here's to your health.
Men, have trouble getting your stream to start? Look for a men's room everywhere you go? Need to go so urgently you can't wait? Worry about impotence, sexual dysfunction, and cancer? Then you need our best-selling supplement, Maximum Prostate. Each Maximum Prostate capsule contains 300 milligrams of pure natural mixed beta-cytosterols from plant sources. That's as much beta-cytosterol content as 3,000 capsules of dried saw palmetto berries. Men all over the U.S. and other countries are experiencing the amazing benefits of Maximum Prostate. You can join them now. To the listeners of Blue Zone Wellness, we are offering you 2 bottles of Maximum Prostate for just $39.95 plus shipping. Just go to MaximumProstate.net and place your order right now. That's MaximumProstate.net, and join the numerous other men who have experienced the power of Maximum Prostate.
Welcome back to Blue Zone Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Thank you for listening to Blue Zone Wellness, wherever you may be listening. And even if you're not listening live, if you happen to be listening to the on-demand archive, again, welcome. Thank you for listening. But right now, we're broadcasting live here, as we do every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. I'd like to remind you, if you're listening live and you would like to call in with a question or a comment, you can do so at 917-889-2207. That's 917-889-2207. And we're going to go ahead and get started with our first article that we're going to discuss here. And this is an article that we didn't get to last week, and it's such an important and interesting article that I feel that we need to talk about this. It came out on March the 6th, and we typically stay within the articles that came out during the week, hence the name of this segment, The Week in Natural News Review. But because we didn't get to this one last week, we're going to talk about it today. Over almost 200,000 read this article. And so it's an article that was published at Mercola.com. And in this article, Dr. Mercola, it's entitled How Medical Ripoffs Threaten Your Health and Your Financial Security. So it's talking about how not only can medical ripoffs threaten your health, but also your finances. And he starts off by saying, I have enormous respect for the scientific method, and I believe when properly applied, it can provide us with profound and valid truths that can guide and direct our treatment strategies. Dr. Mercola goes on to say further, but what many people fail to appreciate is that much of the research published has been deeply influenced and severely tainted by tremendous conflicts of interest and profit-driven motives, which is very true. He says further, shockingly, according to a British poll from last year, more than 1 in 10 scientists and doctors claim to have witnessed colleagues deliberately fabricating data in order to get their research published. Needless to say, scientific fraud has profound implications for patients. After all, published research is used to devise medical recommendations for patients across the country, if not the world. Other hallmarks of the American healthcare system are gross overcharges, billing fraud, and the routine use of tests and treatments that have little or no benefit, or worse, do more harm than good. And then Dr. Mercola goes on, as we're going to talk about in the remainder of this somewhat lengthy article, of some of these things that are occurring, and they're resulting in harm in many cases. You have billing fraud, which is hitting your pocketbook. The routine use of tests and treatments that have little or no benefits. That's also hitting your pocketbook and potentially damaging your health. And again, if you have people fabricating data rather to get their research published, and then other doctors, providers use this research to determine treatments. You can see that could be very, very, very problematic. Now, as Dr. Mercola goes on to point out, he says one of the latest examples of scientific fraud endangering patients is that of a type of starch, which is used intravenously to replace lost blood volume in critically ill patients. He says a recent report by MedicineNet.com revealed that this practice turns out to be based on studies loaded with fraudulent data and actually does more harm than good. And then he quotes the reference. He says, quote, according to a new review article in the February 20th issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association, the starchy solution may instead boost the risk of death or kidney failure, the featured article says. Almost certainly what is happening is that some of the starch molecules leak out of blood vessels into the kidney itself so that the kidney doesn't work as efficiently, said Dr. David Pullman at Ochsner Health System in New Orleans. He was not involved in the new review. Now, Dr. Mercola says further in this particular article, he says, the issue was initially uncovered in 2011 when investigators discovered that a majority of the research conducted by Dr. Joachim Bolt, a German anesthesiologist, contained fraudulent data. Several of his studies were subsequently retracted when Dr. Bolt's research was excluded from the pool of available research in the treatment of this particular starch. It's actually called hydroxyl starch. It was found to be associated with an increased risk of death, kidney failure, and the need for dialysis. The article that he's citing went on to say, quote, luckily for American patients, hydroxyl starch is not commonly used in the United States. But the new analysis serves as a cautionary tale on how fraudulent data can end up endangering patients' lives. So here you have a doctor in this particular case in Germany. But this particular research should actually go anywhere and be used by doctors, because these medical journals are read in different places around, in different countries, around the world. And so your doctor or your medical healthcare professional may read this article and look at this data and be influenced by this data and make recommendations that could actually cost you your life or a loved one their life. Dr. Mercola goes on to say further in this particular article, he says, in related news, a second report has been issued by the Choosing Wisely campaign, sponsored by the Foundation of the American Board of Internal Medicine. He says the list was compiled by 17 specialty groups representing more than 350,000 doctors. He goes on to say further that last year's report warned doctors against using 45 tests, procedures, and treatments that either provide no benefit or worse, do more harm than good. He says this year another 90 tests and treatments were on the list, and he cites NPR. He says, as reported by NPR, quote, the idea is to curb unnecessary, wasteful, and other harmful care, its sponsors say, not to ration care. As one foundation official pointed out last year, rationing is denial of care that patients need, while the Choosing Wisely campaign aims to reduce care that has no value. And then he goes on to point out some examples. He says examples of care deemed to be of little or no benefit include the following. And if you're listening, please listen very carefully to this, because you need to have enough information when you get sick, or if you get sick, or a loved one gets sick, to make an informed decision. And when you're kept in the dark about these things, it can cause problems both financially and health-wise. And Dr. Mercola goes on to point out some of the tests and procedures. He says using feeding tubes in patients with advanced dementia, assisting such patients to take food by mouth, is more advantageous to the patient. Another thing that this group pointed out was EEGs on patients with recurrent headaches. The test does not improve diagnosis or outcome. It only increases the cost. So unnecessary EEGs. Routine annual PAP tests on women between the ages of 30 to 65. He says once every 3 years is enough, as opposed to having one every year. leaving implantable defibrillators on when a patient with incurable disease has elected to forego resuscitation. Again, unnecessary. Using cough and cold medicine in children under the age of 4 suffering from respiratory illness. Says these medications offer little benefit and can have serious side effects and can lead to accidental overdose. The next one, repeat bone scans for osteoporosis more frequently. Okay, we had a little, I think you lost me there for a second, but I think we're back on now. We'll go ahead and keep going. We'll move to the next one. We were talking about these unnecessary procedures as pointed out in some of the studies and whatnot, and we were talking and we were referencing an article by Dr. Joseph Mercola at Mercola.com. And I stopped at the, before we were disconnected, I stopped at the one where he said repeat bone scans for osteoporosis more frequently than biannually, that's twice a year. He says healthy women over 67 with normal bone mass can go up to 10 years without repeat bone scan. The next one is use of such drugs as Valium and sedatives or sleep aids in older adults with insomnia, agitation, or delirium. These drugs more than double the risk of auto accidents, falls, hip fractures, and even death. Screening healthy individuals for cancer using CT or PET scans, as the likelihood of finding cancer with these means is only about 1%. The scans are likely to detect harmless growths, which lead to additional tests, biopsies, and unnecessary surgeries. Again, let me repeat that one. Screening a person, people who are already healthy, who are healthy, for cancer using a CT or PET scans, as the likelihood of finding cancer with these means is only about 1%, and the scans are likely to detect harmless growths which lead to additional tests, as well as biopsies and unnecessary surgeries. Finally, inducing labor or performing a cesarean section for a baby who's less than full term without a medical cause. Labor induction and or C-section can increase the risk of learning disabilities and respiratory problems. There was one article that actually came out on that this week. We didn't choose to put that article in this area, but it talked about how children with who were taken by C-section can also be opened up to more infections or having a weaker immune system over time, over life. Finally, routine CT scans on children with minor head injuries. Simple observation is just as good and spares the child from radiation-related health risk. And then Dr. Mercola goes on to point out the costs, risk analysis, and the cost of our return of our investment here in America specifically in terms of what we get for what we pay for. And he says in this article, when you start to consider the volume of unnecessary drugs, tests, procedures, and surgeries conducted each and every day, the reason why Americans spend twice as much on health care per capita than any other nation on the planet, yet still rank dead last in terms of quality of care among industrialized countries, becomes clearer. He says, according to a 2011 report by the global consulting firm Milliman, annual health care costs for the average American family of four if covered by a preferred provider organization, is a staggering $19,393. So if you have a family of four and your cost for insurance, basically, if you're covered by a preferred provider organization, is about $20,000 a year. He goes on to say between 2002 and 2011 alone, the average cost of health care for American families doubled. That's just a period of about 9 years. The health care cost for the average American family doubled in 9 years. He says a recent article lists 50 signs that the U.S. healthcare system is gigantic, is a gigantic money-making scam is about to collapse, he says. This list includes the following amazing statistics. Listen closely. This year, the American people will spend approximately $2.8 trillion on healthcare, and it is being projected that Americans will spend $4.5 trillion on healthcare by the year 2019. Second, if the healthcare system was a country, it would be the sixth largest economy on the entire planet. Approximately 60% of all personal bankruptcies in the United States are related to medical bills. That's amazing. That's far more than 50% are related to healthcare costs. The U.S. healthcare industry has spent more than $5 billion on lobbying our politicians in Washington, D.C., he says, since 1998. More than $5 billion. He says the ambulance industry makes more money each year than the movie industry. Now, here is when we have abuses of the system like this, this is what leads to the very unpopular Obama healthcare law. It's unpopular. It's more people are distasteful of it than they find it distasteful than those that do. But think about it. When you have these type of abuses and these type of costs, and it's hurting the average American family, and no one is doing anything significant about it, no one's suggesting that we put more emphasis on alternative medicine, that we make it easier for natural practitioners to practice. But when we keep going down a particular road to the pain gets so bad until the system is about to crush in on itself, then someone can come in and introduce something like that bill, which is not necessarily all bad, but the negatives outweigh the positives when you take the thing in its totality. Dr. Mercola continues. He says, however, it's not just a matter of ignorantly doing too many things that provide little value or benefit. He said the United States healthcare system is also fraught with gross overcharges and outright billing fraud. And he cites a recent Time magazine interview with Stephen Brill. And he says, quote, in the cover story, and he quotes an article under, and it's the cover story, it was entitled, the article, I guess, was entitled Bitter Pill. And quoting from the article, he says, simple lab work done during a few days in the hospital can cost more than a car, just for lab work. A trip to the emergency room for chest pains that turn out to be indigestion brings a bill that can exceed the price of a semester at college. When we debate healthcare policy in America, we seem to jump right to the issue of who should pay the bills, blowing past what should be the first question. Why exactly are the bills so high? Stephen Brill spent 7 months analyzing hundreds of bills from hospitals, doctors and drug companies, and medical equipment manufacturers to find out who was setting such high prices and pocketing the biggest profits. So here we have it again. This is something that I've always said, even when the healthcare debate was going on here in the U.S., is the debate was not about lowering the cost themselves. The debate was really about shifting the cost from one group of people to the next instead of dealing with what was causing the underlying problem. So it's the same type of mentality that we take on when we talk about health. Instead of looking at the underlying cause and dealing with the cause, we look at the symptoms and try to treat the symptoms. It's the same thing we did with the healthcare debate. Instead of looking at what's causing the high cost, why are the costs so high? We're saying, well, it's too high. We're just going to shift the burden to everybody instead of looking at how to bring the cost down in the first place. Dr. Mercola goes on to say in this particular article, citing this particular article, he says, in Bitter Pill, Why Medical Bills Are Killing Us, he was citing Brill, the author, interviewed in this, that was discussed in this particular article in Time magazine. He says, Brill dissects our profit-driven sickness management industry posing as healthcare. He points out it's a fascinating piece, and I highly recommend reading it in its entirety. And then he begins to cite from this, or he begins to quote from this particular article that was published in Time magazine. It's called The Bitter Pill. In part, he says, Reach's Bill and six others examined line by line for this article after a close-up window into what happens when powerless buyers meet sellers in what is the ultimate seller's market. The result is a uniquely American gold rush for those who provide everything from wonder drugs to canes to high-tech implants to CT scans to hospital bill coding and collection services. In hundreds of small and mid-sized cities across the country, the American healthcare market has transformed tax-exempt nonprofit hospitals into the town's most profitable businesses and largest employers, often presided over by the region's most richly compensated executives. And he goes on to say, and in our largest cities, the system offers lavish paychecks even to mid-level hospital managers like the 14 administrators at New York City's Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center who paid who are paid over $500,000 a year, including six who make over $1 million. Taken as a whole, these powerful institutions and the bills they churn out dominate the nation's economy and put demands on taxpayers to a degree unequaled anywhere else on earth. He goes on to say further, in the United States, people spend about 20% of the gross domestic product on health care, compared with about half that in most developed countries. Yet in every measurable way, the results of our health care system produces, are no better and often worse than the outcomes in those countries. According to one of a series of exhaustive studies done by the McKinsey & Company consulting firm, we spend more on health care than the next 10 biggest spenders combined, being Japan, Germany, France, China, the UK, Italy, Canada, Brazil, Spain, and Australia. We may be shocked, he said, at the $60 billion price tag for cleaning up after Hurricane Sandy. We spent almost that much last week on health care. We spend more every year on artificial knees and hips than that than what Hollywood collects at the box office. And finally, we see how these things are getting out of hand. Now, finally, Dr. Mercola goes on in this last part of the article, and that I'm going to deal with anyway. And again, you can read this article in its entirety at Mercola.com. This last part he talks about are what we do in getting into these unnecessary tests. But before we go, let's think about what we just read for a moment. We spend, the United States of America, on our health care, we spend more on health care than the next 10 biggest spenders combined. So if you were to take everything that Japan, Germany, France, China, the UK, Italy, Canada, Brazil, Spain, and Australia spends on health care and combine it all together, we alone spend more on health care than all of what they spend combined. And yet we're listed last in terms of results in healthcare than any other industrialized nation. There is a problem with that. So we have a healthcare system, as the article pointed out, which is a franchise of a business that's being run and is posing as a healthcare system. Now, there's nothing wrong with making a profit, but whenever you have a healthcare system or a business that is posing as one thing when it really has something else at its heart, you're going to get what we have now, and the result is that you get an infringement of the government, and then the government comes in and begins to make laws like what we have, where we now, under the Obama healthcare law, the Affordable Care Act, I think is the official name of it, is now we don't have an opportunity to choose. You will get insurance, and if not, you will be penalized through the tax code. And so this is what happens, and we begin to lose some of our, what I would contest are our civil liberties, all because of greed. Now, finally in this article, Dr. Mercola says, last year I interviewed Alan Castle, a drug policy researcher at the University of Victoria in British Columbia, and author of several books, including Seeking Sickness, Medical Screening and the Misguided Hunt for Disease, which he addresses medical screening and disease prevention. Dr. Mercola says further, there's an enormous amount of effort and research invested in the traditional community into medical screening procedures, which conventional medicine views as prevention. This, he says, is a fatally flawed view, since diagnostic tools, some of which are grossly inaccurate, cannot actually prevent disease from occurring. They can only help diagnose what has already occurred. Furthermore, regular screening tends to increase unnecessary use of machines, and you may receive a diagnosis and a treatment for a condition that might never have led to any symptoms or had any impact on your longevity or your life. He says, moreover, that much like myself, Castle's research has led him to seriously question common tests like mammography for breast cancer and the PSA test for prostate cancer. According to Dr. Castle, in his research, he says, quote, so much of what we consider to be disease in the orthodox medicine world has been created, has been shaped, and has really been molded by the pharmaceutical industry. And very much what we consider to be medicine is determined by the kinds of things that end in what the drug industry calls the drug successful visit. Not just anything that we potentially could be, not just anything that we potentially could be sick with, but anything that any healthy person could get. And really, screening is about looking in healthy people to find signs of disease. He says, I want to distinguish right off the bat that when I'm talking about screening, I'm not talking about people who have no symptoms, who are otherwise healthy, and who have really no reason to consult the doctor or being told, you need to be proactive. You need to seek out early signs of disease. That's a good thing to do to keep yourself healthy. People actually have symptoms, feel a lump or whatever, and then go in for a test. That's a diagnostic test. That's something different. I'm talking about a screening test when you're taking otherwise healthy people and trying to find signs of disease in them. And now, this is one of the things that I learned in school, is that many things that are called diseased are not actually diseased. And disease is just a group of symptoms in general that are given the name disease. In many cases that are totally treatable, and essentially the way we look at it from a natural health perspective is it's the body telling you where there's a problem. The body is saying, listen, here's the problem, and the body is the best diagnostic tool. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't use, that diagnostic tools are not useful. That's not what I'm saying. But as we pointed out earlier, when you're telling women who are otherwise healthy to go and get this every year or get that every year, or men to get this every year, that every year, if these methods were so effective, the way that we practice medicine in this country, traditional medicine in this country, allopathic medicine in this country, if these methods of practicing medicine were so successful, then we would not be spending so much money, $2 or $3 trillion a year, and still have so many sick people. If this was a business being run, and you're looking at a cost risk analysis or a cost benefit analysis, and you're spending that much money, and you're not seeing the long term results, and you're having to keep putting that much money into the system, the business would go bankrupt eventually. And so we're going to move on, and we spent quite a bit of time on that, and so we need to move on to our next article, which is how to deal with infections without antibiotics. Again, I'm going to reference Dr. Mercola again in a particular article. And he talks about skin and soft tissue infections are among the most common bacteria infections encountered in clinical medicine, which is true. And he goes on to say, such infections can be caused by a number of bacteria that gain entrance into your body via cuts, scrapes, bites, or even open wounds. And even bacteria that normally live on your skin can cause an infection when introduced into your body this way. So skin and soft tissue infections account for more than 14 million hospital visits each year, costing the healthcare system an estimated $24 billion. So basically he points out that skin and soft tissue infections account for about 14 million hospital visits, and that doesn't even include visits to doctor's offices. That's just hospital visits each year, and this is costing the healthcare system somewhere in the neighborhood of about $24 billion. He goes on to point out that unfortunately many infections are becoming increasingly difficult to treat because antibiotic overuse has led to the emergence of antibiotic-resistant bacteria such as methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus, or basically MRSA, or staph, which is a staph infection. And he also talks about finding effective countermeasures to this growing public health threat has turned out few options, but the remedy may be as simple as colored light. Now, this is something that I haven't talked about on here before on Blue Zone Wellness. We've talked about some natural antibiotics, like we've talked about garlic, we've talked about vitamin D, we've talked about echinacea, we've talked about colloidal silver. We talked about high doses of vitamin C. There are many, many natural biotics. We talked about olive leaf extract. There are many, many, many powerful natural antibiotics. Golden seal. Here he's talking about a remedy, I guess you could say, is colored light. And in this case, it's blue light. And he points out, according to a new proof of principle study, blue light can selectively eliminate infections caused by certain types of bacteria. According to lead researcher Michael R. Hamlin of the Massachusetts General Hospital, he says microbes replicate very rapidly, and in a mutation that helps a microbe survive in the presence of an antibiotic drug will quickly predominate throughout the microbial population. Recently, a dangerous new enzyme, NDM1, that makes some bacteria resistant to almost all antibiotics available has been found in the United States. Many physicians are concerned that severe infections may soon be untreatable. Blue light is a potential non-toxic, non-antibiotic approach for treating skin and soft tissue infections, especially those caused by antibiotic-resistant pathogens. So here's just something as simple as... Here again, we had another brief technical issue. We seem to be having a couple of technical issues this week. But basically, we're talking about blue light and how blue light has a study from a researcher, rather, Dr. M.R. Hamlin of the Massachusetts General Hospital. And he was talking about how there's some bacteria that are coming back that has become resistant to antibiotics because of the overuse of antibiotics. And now they become resistant to these antibiotics, and now they're worrying that some of these devastating infections could become untreatable. See, that's the thing about natural antibiotics. There's no resistant bacteria that can be developed to a natural antibiotic because it's natural. It's not synthetic. And the reason you have these bacteria that become resistant to antibiotics is because when you introduce antibiotics into the system, drug antibiotics, they wipe out the majority of the bacteria, but they leave some, and the strains that are left become resistant to that antibiotic again, and many other antibiotics. So by the time you Because there's so many antibiotics given out, now you have these strains of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And so Dr. Mercola goes on to point out further, after citing the study with blue light having the capacity to kill these microbes, he says, in the study, lab animals were infected with a particular type of bacteria. He says, incredibly, all of the animals treated with blue light survived, while 82% of the controls died. Could this possibly be, he asked, the beginning of a whole new treatment paradigm for infections? And he points out that it's a fact of the matter that we're actually beginning to end. We're moving into an era where antibiotics are becoming so ineffective that we're going to probably leave that era pretty soon. He goes on to say further that blue light therapy has also been found to be effective against MRSA and other resistant bugs, offering new hope for effective treatments. He says in a previous study published in 2009, over 90% of community-acquired and hospital-acquired strains of MRSA were successfully eradicated within mere minutes of exposure to blue light, according to the authors. He says, according to the authors, these significant levels of photo destruction of low dosages indicate that irradiation with 407 nm LED light energy can be practical, or maybe a practical, inexpensive alternative to treatment with pharmacological agents, particularly in cases involving cutaneous and subcutaneous MRSA infections that are susceptible to non-invasive types of radiation. And he goes on to point out that the word radiation being used here does not refer to ionizing radiation, but rather the emission of energy from an LED light source, which is a different kind. It's not harmful. Here within the blue light spectrum, which has a range of 450 to 495 nanometers. And he says the study in question used 470 nanometers of blue light. Natural sunlight will expose you to the full spectrum from 415 to 660 nm light, which encompasses the entire spectrum of colors, being violet, blue, green, yellow, orange, and red. Now remember, I always talk about eating in line with the colors of the rainbow. The colors of the rainbow being remembered by the acronym Roy G. Biv, red, green, yellow, orange, blue, indigo, and violet. And so here we see the Creator has also given us blue light, and it has the capacity to kill these microbes, even though they are that resistant to antibiotics. Now think about, this is why when you go out into the sunlight, when it shines, it can kill all kinds of viruses and bacteria, etc. And so here we begin to understand, when we talk about those laws or those laws of health that we talk about on here, when I tell you that we practice them in such a way, we should practice them in such a way that are consistent with what our Creator has given us. And when we do that, we find this plan cannot be improved upon. And so when you have a scientific application of those laws of health, which are trust in the Creator, sunshine, exercise, water, air, rest, diet, and self-control or temperance, you can begin to see why this blue light would work, because one of those laws of health is actually sunshine, which encompasses this blue light, as he points out in this article. He goes on to say a similar study from 2008 had found 405 nanograms of blue light to be an effective treatment for MRSA. However, according to the researchers, the 390 to 420 nanometer spectral width could raise safety concerns in clinical practice, as it contains a part of the ultraviolet light within the spectrum. Fortunately, the 2009 follow-up study demonstrated that UV is not necessary to successfully kill the pathogens. Blue light therapy was actually FDA approved for the treatment of severe acne. Okay, I think we're back again. We're having a lot of technical issues today for some reason, but we're going to keep forging forward. Again, we were talking about the ability of blue light to destroy bacteria and other microbes that cause problems. And I was saying that blue light was actually FDA approved over a decade ago for the treatment of severe acne, but many of the blue light treatments for acne use the same wavelengths needed to kill antibiotic resistant bacteria like MRSA, which means the technology is already commercially available. And in 2006, he says, Dr. Mercola points out, researchers also tested a combination of 405 nanometer blue light and 880 nanometer infrared light on MRSA in vitro. And according to the authors, the two common aerobes, and they're talking about, and I'm just going to cut to the chase here. The result was that the treatments of blue light upon these different types of microbes, MRSA, etc., was very, very, very effective. And Dr. Mercola points out, he says, 2 years ago, I reported the finding that low vitamin D levels increase your risk of being a nasal carrier of MRSA. Adjusting for age, race, recent antibiotic usage, recent hospitalization, and poverty. This means that vitamin D status could be a modifiable risk factor for MRSA carriage and potentially MRSA infection carriage, and is yet another reason for making sure your vitamin D levels are optimized year-round. He says the study built upon the already established finding that vitamin D helps regulate your immune system and offers potent protection against infections. Now, he goes on to talk about a little bit more about vitamin D, but then he goes on talking about, again, which is another one of the, we get vitamin D from the sunshine. The best type of vitamin D we can get is we get from the sunshine. So again, it goes to show how the Creator has given us a large amounts of natural remedies for free. Dr. Mercola goes on to point out further in this, and we're going to have to cut this short because we're running low on time, but I get a little bit more into what he's talking about here. He says, in college, I developed a common nail infection. And he says, these infections are notoriously difficult to treat, even with powerful oral antifungal drugs. He says, I acquired the infection largely as a result of not understanding what an optimal diet was and many thousands of miles of running. I tried many different therapies to eliminate it for nearly 20 years, but it only finally resolved when I wasn't even trying to get rid of it. He says, I noticed that my infection disappeared after frequent daily dosages of sunshine on my toes. It makes perfect sense, he says, since UVB is very potent germicidal. It was clearly responsible for removing the infection that dozens of previous approaches had failed miserably at. I do believe that regular, ideally daily, exposures for many months are required for this to work. Going out a few days a month will not be enough to treat this resistant infection. One could likely use a tanning bed or UVB lamp to get the same results. Even conventional is UVB, ideally through sun exposure. Interestingly enough, he says, I also tried to get a symmetrical tan, so was tanning my armpits, and I also noticed that it eliminated armpit odor, probably by the same mechanism, by the UVB killing odor causing bacteria in the armpit. So basically, essentially he's talking about here, and we're not going to go into the rest of the article, but essentially he's talking about here is the benefits of the sun and benefit of blue light having the capacity to destroy infections without antibiotics. Also, the sunshine having the ability to destroy infections without antibiotics. This is why vitamin D is the best. Vitamin D3 specifically. As I have a show on here. You can look in the archive to find it where we talk about the types of vitamin D you should use, why you should use it, how much you should take if you're taking it. Again, ideally, it's best to get it in the sun, to get natural sunshine. But if you can't get out in the sunshine, or if you live in the wintertime, if you live in an area where you can't get a lot of sun, then you need to be taking a vitamin D3 supplement. And we also talked about why you need to have, if you're not eating copious amounts of leafy green vegetables, et cetera, then if you're taking vitamin D3, you need to be taking also vitamin K. Of course, you could, if you're not eating copious amounts of those foods, you could get into a problem there. We're going to flip over here because we're running low on time. And we're going to go into our healing food segment. And in this healing food segment, I want to talk about briefly an extract of edible red seaweed. Let me stop here for a second. Before we move into that, I want to talk about this particular seaweed, which is not really for our next segment. It's for this segment. And I'll be quick on this. This seaweed is an extract, which is a red seaweed. It was found to be 27% more effective than standard chemo in shrinking breast tumors in rats, while showing much less toxicity to liver and kidneys, and even improving the rats' antioxidant status in both blood and tissues. Now, this particular red seaweed, edible seaweed, is pronounced, let's see if I can pronounce this correctly, it's pronounced, at least it's spelled like it appears to be pronounced, Uchuma cottoni, and it's spelled Euchuma and Cottoni, and it is basically, according to the article, it grows naturally within about 20 degrees of the equator and is most commonly found in East Asia. Researchers at the University of Putra, Malaysia, harvested the seaweed from the coastal waters of North Borneo in January. The seaweed was shade dried for about 3 days and extracted using an 80% ethanol solution, which was then evaporated to leave a dry powder extract. The extract was found to be rich in nutrients such as iodine, quercetin, rutin, carotenoids, and other antioxidants. To test the extract against breast cancer, spray Dolly rats were injected with LA7 breast cancer cells and divided into three groups. One group was not treated at all. The second was treated with the most commonly used breast cancer chemo drug at 10 milligrams per kilogram body weight. And the third group was treated with the seaweed extract at 100 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. According to the researchers, this dose is equivalent to giving 20-pound woman an 800 milligram tablet of the seaweed extract. The results were thus: the rats treated with the chemo drug for 4 weeks showed a 71% decrease in the size of their tumors, but those treated with the seaweed extract had their tumors shrink by 91%, which is an improvement of 27% over the chemo. The chemo drug also caused significant toxicity to the rats' kidneys and their livers, causing visible lesions on those organs. Not only did the seaweed show no toxicity to the liver or kidney lesions, it actually improved the rat's antioxidant status. And he points out, the article points out, and this is an article taken from naturalnews.com, MDA is a key marker of oxidative stress, with higher MDA levels indicating increased oxidative damage. And the treatment with the chemo drug decreased the rat's MDA levels by 27%, but again, the seaweed performed better and decreased their MDA levels by 46%. Conversely, an important marker, he says, of antioxidant status is the glutathione level in the erythrocytes, which are red blood cells, with higher glutathione levels indicating improved antioxidant status. The chemo-treated rats saw their levels drop by 57%, but the glutathione levels actually increased by 78% in the seaweed rats, showing a sizable advantage for the antioxidant status. So, again, we can see when you have properly grown and cultivated remedies, and when they typically go head to head with drug therapies, they would typically win almost every time. Now, the article went on to point out that various seaweeds have been used for centuries in Chinese and Japanese traditional medicine against breast cancer. And epidemiological studies have also showed that daily seaweed consumption may dramatically lower your breast cancer risk, and is considered one reason why Japanese women have 83% less breast cancer than those women who live in the West. The article went on to point out further that more recently a clinical trial in the United States showed that just 5 grams per day of dried seaweed decreased levels of a pro-cancer protein called UPAR by 47% in postmenopausal women. This new study, the article went on to point out, provides yet more good science to the case for using seaweed against breast cancer. And while the latest seaweed still must be proven out in human patients, it is impressive that the effective dose is likely attainable in human patients. Using the extract of a seaweed, which has been routinely eaten by Malaysian locals for decades with apparently no ill effects. So again, as they've used in Japanese and Chinese medicine, and most of us who've gone to naturopathic doctor school or homeopathic school or whatnot, we'll have studied in our studies either Chinese herbal medicine or Ayurvedic medicine, which is from India, and study into some of these different modalities from different countries and how they have used these particular certain herbs or seaweeds or whatever in treating diseases and abnormalities. Now, as we pivot over to we're running behind. As we pivot over in the final few minutes of the show, we're going to pivot over to our healing food segment. And I'm going to start off in this segment. We're going to talk about mango briefly, but we're also going to talk about a study that came out talking about the vegetarian diet. And basically, in this particular study, it was conducted by researchers from the University of Oxford in the UK. And they published a report of this study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition that explains how the risk of hospitalization or death from heart disease is 32% lower in vegetarians than people who eat meat and fish. But there are many people who say, well, you know, I don't eat meat, I just eat fish. Well, you know, personally, in my estimation, meat, fish is meat. It has 2 eyes, a nose, mouth, so just like a chicken does or some other fish, or some other meat, rather. So it has a face, is what I'm trying to say. And so even though this particular study from the UK and published in the Journal of Clinical Nutrition pointed out that if you're a consumer of meat or, quote, fish, you have or if you're a vegetarian, rather, you have a 32% lower rate of developing heart disease than those who eat either meat or fish. And heart disease is actually, for Western society, is actually continues to be the number one cause of death. In the United States alone, as a matter of fact, 700,000 men and women each year die from some form of heart disease. That's almost 1 million people a year. In the largest study of its kind conducted in the UK, scientists compared rates of heart disease between vegetarians and non-vegetarians. And in this particular study, the lead author was a Dr. Francisca Crowe. And he let me quote him. He says, most of the difference in risk is probably caused by effects on cholesterol and blood pressure, and shows the important role of diet in the prevention of heart disease. And so basically, the researchers analyzed the diet in this particular study of nearly 45,000 British and Scottish volunteers enrolled in the European Prospective Investigation into Cancer and Nutrition, for short. And study and of the 45,000 people, 34% of the participants were vegetarians. Now, they're not, we advocate a vegan diet, a well-balanced vegan diet. Now, they were vegetarians. They didn't say that they were vegans. And even with a vegetarian diet, they were still able to get a far better result than those who were still consuming flesh. So out of these 45,000 volunteers, 34% of them were vegetarian. The volunteers actually completed a lifestyle questionnaire detailing their diet and their exercise, as well as other factors affecting health, such as smoking and alcohol consumption. And almost 20,000 participants had their blood pressure recorded, and they gave, not only that, they gave blood samples for cholesterol testing. And the participants in this study were tracked for about 20 years, almost 20 years, and the researchers identified 1,230, about 1,200 cases of heart disease, which resulted in 169 deaths and about 1,066 hospital diagnoses. But according to the authors of the study, they concluded that the results clearly show that the risk of heart disease in vegetarians is about a third lower than in comparable non-vegetarians. The researchers then also found that vegetarians had lower blood pressures, cholesterol levels than non-vegetarians, which is thought to be the main reason behind their reduced risk of heart disease. And so, again, if you're listening to this and it's healing foods, your healing food should reflect the rainbow. As I've said this before, the closer you eat in harmony with the rainbow, remember we talked about those the healing rays of the sun, that full spectrum light, how it can kill bacteria. So those same colors of the rainbow are the same colors that your food should be in your food. That should comprise the majority of that will comprise a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables, etc. In doing that, even if you're not a vegan yet, if you've just been a vegetarian, eating largely of these foods, you can reduce the likelihood that you would die from some form of heart disease, a vascular disease. Now, we've run out of time. I spent a little bit more time in the first segment than I intended. Not only that, we had a few technical problems on a couple of occasions. But we got into at least one of the articles that we wanted to deal with in the healing food. The other one was basically talking about the benefit of mango. We'll deal with that next week in the healing food section, and we'll make sure we get into talking about our healing supplement, healing herb. Thank you for listening. I hope that you enjoyed the show. If you had any questions, be sure you can re-listen to this. It will be available probably about 10 to 15 minutes, maybe even sooner after the broadcast ends. You can listen to the notes. You can visit my blog, and you can read there, faith3ministries.com/WordPress or bluezonewellness.org. Remember, you can check me out at Facebook, facebook.com/naturedoc. Be sure to join me right here next week again from 4 to 5 for Blue Zone Wellness. Thank you for listening, and have a blessed day.